Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Okay, everybody. It is the last Wednesday of January 2021, and things are normal-ish, considering the three previous Wednesdays, the January 6th insurrection, the following Wednesday we saw the second impeachment of the 45th POTUS, and then the January 20th inauguration. We are now at January 27th, now nearly to the minute. It has been a week since Joe Biden took the oath of office and became the president. So we want to check in with you to see whether you feel any different after a week into the Biden administration. We will open the phones in just a little bit. In those 7 days since the inauguration, three of Biden's cabinet-level appointees have been confirmed, including Janet Yellen, the first woman to run the Federal Reserve, and General Lloyd Austin, the first African-American to run the Department of Defense. And then there are a few firsts awaiting confirmation, including Deb Haaland, who would be the first Native American to run the Department of Interior, which oversees the government's treaties with tribal nations, and Pete Buttigieg, who would be the first openly gay man appointed to a cabinet-level position. So we are looking at a much more diverse cabinet than the previous presidents. Biden and his team stepped into the White House with a lot to do, creating a plan from the ground up to fight COVID and deliver a vaccine, getting the rest of his cabinet confirmed by his former colleagues in the Senate, who also have an impeachment trial of his predecessor on the agenda. Joining me now is Amy Walter, the national editor of the Cook Political Report and host of Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway. Amy, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Allison, how are you doing?
I am doing great. Let's start with those cabinet picks. What can you tell us about the policies we might expect from some of these firsts, from Fed Chair Yellen to Defense Secretary General Austin? What have they done so far?
Right. So I think we have to think about this maybe specifically and then broaden it out to really what their role would be in the broader environment. You know, I think when you take a look at who Joe Biden picked to be in his cabinet, again, there are many firsts, and yet they are both historic and yet pretty establishment at the same time. And it's interesting, I sort of described his pick for the vice president when he was then candidate, Kamala Harris, which is obviously she is a first. And yet she's also someone who has been part of sort of politics and traditional governing for years and years and years. She's not new to this process. And so when we look at some of the folks that are surrounding the president and his cabinet and his inner circle, they are people who have been either part of the previous administration, the Obama administration, the Clinton administration. They've been in government for a while. So these are folks with a great deal of experience, even as they are firsts, as you pointed out, whether it's Janet Yellen or Pete Buttigieg. And so the way that they govern is going to potentially look familiar to those of us who remember the Obama or the Clinton eras. At the same time, I think the argument that the Team Biden is making is by having people with different experiences who come from different backgrounds in those jobs, that alone is a change, even if the way that they govern or the way that they conduct business looks familiar.
So the idea, it's not their first rodeo, but maybe they bring something different to the rodeo.
Correct. Absolutely. And you know, if you're also looking at somebody like a Susan Rice, yesterday she came and briefed reporters on what she sees as her role in the domestic policy shop. This is somebody who obviously has spent a great deal of her career in foreign policy, spent time in the Obama administration, but now is tasked with bringing this, not just her voice and her experience, but also this idea of bringing a focus in every one of the departments and every one of the policies put forward on equity, and specifically on race. And what does that mean? What does that look like? I don't know that we kind of know what that is, right? It's kind of an amorphous term or an amorphous goal. But I think Team Biden is suggesting by putting her front and center is that this is something that's going to animate our conversations. It's always going to be part of the background, even if you're not seeing day-to-day movement on some of these issues.
Listeners, why don't you get on this conversation? What do you think about Biden's first week in office? Has an executive order or a cabinet appointment or anything else made you feel that we have moved past a certain era? Or maybe it has moved fast enough for you. Maybe you want to see something else happen. Maybe he's taken a first step on something and you want him to take a second, third, or fourth right away. What do you want to see from this first 100 days? Give us a call, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. If social media is better for you or more of your jam, our handles are at @allofitwnyc at Twitter and Instagram. My guest is Amy Walter. She's our ride-along national editor of the Cook Political Report and host of Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway. So, Amy, a few things we here at Team All of It noticed. Clearly, a new digital communications team took over the White House website immediately. Within hours of Biden's inauguration, the official website of the presidency brought back its Spanish language version, and expanded options for pronouns were added to the input forms on the site. Mm-hmm. Now, some people might think, okay, this is kind of outward-facing, superficial, maybe virtue signaling. But are there tangible political consequences to things like this?
I think this has been the battle, right, that we've been hearing throughout these last 4 years, and certainly came to a head during the 2020 election, about who is an American? What does it mean to be an American? What is the vision of America going forward? And the Biden argument was, we are not the America that we were 40, 50 years ago, and that's a good thing, and that we need to celebrate that. The argument that you hear from the Trump side, and unfortunately a lot of what you've heard during things like the insurrection at the Capitol, was, we're not going to be that new country. We have to go, this is our America, right? And we're taking this back. And you heard those echoes of the Charlottesville rally back in 2017. And this sense of, you know, who we can be versus who we were. And so you're right. In many ways, this is somewhat virtue signaling, right? Is it changing the world to put a different drop-down menu? Is that suddenly going to make us a more equitable, fair society? No. But it suggests that, yes, the federal government right now, the people in charge, believe that this matters. And you know, it's even little things like now at the press briefing, there is a sign language interpreter, right? Mm-hmm. Again, suggesting that we get that there are people out there who have not been considered part of the conversation, or who haven't been considered, and we're bringing them in.
Along these lines, I'm going to read this graph from the New York Times, and I have two follow-ups for you. This graph says, President Biden's Treasury Department is studying ways to speed up the process of adding Harriet Tubman's portrait to the front of the $20 bill after the Trump administration allowed the Obama-era initiative to lapse, Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, said on Monday. Okay, here's follow-up number one. Are we going to see a lot of this back-to-the-future policy moves, meaning Biden is going to reverse the Trump administration's reversal of the Obama administration?
Right. Doesn't it feel that way?
I mean, a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we had a pretty whiplash last 8 years, right, to go from our first black president to Donald Trump. And now we go to this president and Joe Biden, who in many ways is taking us not just to where Biden was, but where Obama was, but beyond that, right, on some issues like race, gender identity, and other things. And this is the concern, though, I think, if you're thinking much longer term, is that our politics does this, right? That because we are now, if you just look at the popular vote, a 51-47 or a 51-49 or a 50-50 country, that by doing government, by governing through executive orders, that we are really going to do nothing but ping pong back and forth, right? Instead of passing real meaningful legislation that has a longer term impact, like a civil rights bill that would have, you know, the force of law that can't just get pulled up the next time a new president pulls into 1600 Pennsylvania.
My guest is Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report and host of Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway. Are you ready to take some calls, Amy?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's take Rayanne from Brooklyn on line two. Hi, Rayanne. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And there are three things I wanted to say. And this is a wonderful program, by the way.
Thank you.
Number one, after 1 week of having President Biden and Kamala Harris, Vice President, in office, it seems like I feel like we're sleeping better. And that goes for my family, friends, neighbors. I feel like we have a steady hand in the office. The President Biden is there to do the job. He wants to do the job, unlike, in my opinion, previous administration, where it wasn't all that clear. And finally, he seems to be choosing people to in key positions, not just in key departments, key positions, including new ones, whom he is confident can speak to his policies and wishes and hopes and dreams that he's promised to. They can speak on their own. He's not going to cut them off at the knees. That's it.
Rayanne, thanks for calling in. Let's go to line five, which is Lori from Greenwich, Connecticut, calling in. Hi, Lori. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I was just wanting to say that, yes, it has been a bit of whiplash, and that collectively speaking from my circle of friends and family, it's going to take a little bit before we can just cruise on forward. The past couple of weeks, every Wednesday, there's been some big, situation. So I think we're a little bit into PTSD and excited about the future, but haven't really been able to, bask in that glow yet.
Thanks for calling in, Lori. Amy, I think our callers are touching on something, the sense of things feel normal.
Right.
They feel sort of even keeled. And I know a lot of people in our profession have felt that, especially because of the new press secretary, Jen Psaki. Let's take a listen to her answering a question from a reporter.
With unity, are you talking about bipartisanship? Are you talking about something that's widely popular in the United States? Could you sort of go through what Biden's thinking about when he says that he wants to achieve unity?
Sure. Well, the president came in to lead the country, obviously at a time of great division, where there was a great need for healing in his view, and he spoke about that in his inaugural address just last week. So unity to him means, of course, approaching our work on legislative issues through a bipartisan lens, working with Democrats and Republicans, trying to find a path forward on how we can work together to address the problems the American people are facing. That's part of it. But it also means projecting that he is going to govern for all people and address all the issues that the American people are facing. So, for example, that means talking about how the COVID pandemic impacts not just Democrats, but Republicans, not just blue states, but red states, ensuring that he is reaching out to Democratic and Republican governors, Democratic and Republican mayors, and conveying in every opportunity he has that this is a problem that we're all facing together. So I think it's a little bit different than how you can mark, of course, achieving 100 million shots in the arms of Americans in the first 100 days. But unity is about the country feeling that they're in it together. And I think we'll know that when we see it.
Amy, did anything stand out to you about that?
It's so funny that you picked this clip, Allison, because I've been thinking a lot about this, what the term unity means and how it means different things to different people and especially to different parties. So, first of all, I think for Jen Psaki, who, again, not new to this business. In fact, I remember working with her when I was covering Congress, and she was one of the communications people over at the Democratic Congressional Committee. So she's been doing this for quite some time. She's obviously coming into it with the approach that is more traditional, right? The press secretary doesn't spend his or her time getting in fights with the press as much as just answering questions, and in many cases, dodging questions, right? She's also doing her own. This isn't just somebody who's up there saying, I'm going to give you everything you want to know, reporters. She's saying, I'm going to answer the questions I want, and the ones that I'm uncomfortable with, I'm going to sort of obfuscate a little bit and do a little dance, right?
So can I play this for you? This is so funny you brought this to me. It's the, we've seen her style. It's sort of, she's managing the press, and it made me laugh because her Twitter bio says, mother of two humans under five, I think it is. So she's kind of used at managing, and somebody has already put a super cut of her go-to, I'm going to talk around this. Let's take a listen.
I'll circle back if there's more I can share with you. But I'll circle back with you if there's more to convey. I'll have to just circle back with you. We can circle back. I'm happy to circle back with you. I can circle back. I will have to circle back on that one. That's an excellent question. Oh, such an important question. We will circle back with you, and we'll circle back with you. It's an interesting question, but we'll circle back. I'm happy to circle back, but I'll have to circle back with you on it. It's a good question, but we'll circle back with you on this today. We will certainly circle back with you more directly. I hate to disappoint you, but I will have to circle back with you on that as well.
I will circle back to you about that play date.
This is what we're, and again, this is what we're quote unquote used to, but do we necessarily like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's normal, but is that the part of normal? In some ways, I think what we've been hearing from some of the listeners is, okay, but that's at least a normal that I'm used to, right? People kind of either avoiding a question that they don't want to answer, or in this case, getting questions that they really can't answer, right? I mean, some of those are, I'm circling back to you because people are asking questions that really there is no answer to, or she shouldn't know in the first 4 days of this. But to this question of unity and what that means, as she pointed out, like, I think what Democrats see as unity, or what Biden sees as unity, is we're willing to work with everybody. But mostly what unity means is we're turning down the heat. It's maybe a term for civility, right? Another term for civility is unity. It doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything. And it doesn't even mean that we're going to get agreement on bipartisan legislation. We can not get agreement on legislation and still call it unity. What I hear from Republicans is any time that Democrats are pushing something, whether it's impeachment, whether it is going on an issue that is, you know, something that Democrats love, but say Republicans don't, they say, well, that's not unity. How can you bring up this issue? That's just divisive, right? And in unity, I think if you're going to describe what many Republicans think that means is, oh, something that we all agree to as being the most important thing. But finding that is impossible. So we're in a place where even the definitions of terms are being interpreted very, very differently.
My guest is Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report and host of Politics with Amy Walter. We're talking about the first week of the Biden administration. We are talking about it with you. We will take your calls right after a quick break and continue with Amy. This is All of It. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My ride along this hour is Amy Walter, host of Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway. You are also my guests this hour. Amy, let's take some calls. And if you hear something that's interesting to you, please, please do dive in. Let's go to Barry, who's been holding. He's calling in from Farmingdale, New York. Barry, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. The first thing I want to say is that I'm sleeping a lot better now that that Trump is out of office. I also feel that we should try Trump and impeach him. I think that Chuck Schumer has to play hardball with the Grim Reaper, because the Grim Reaper has no respect, none whatsoever, for the Democrats. And Chuck Schumer has to raise his voice and McConnell in his place. He also needs to make sure that Cruz and all the other senators who were instrumental in January 6th also be either censored or removed from Congress, because January 6th was a treasonous act, mm-hmm. and Trump was absolutely in charge of it.
Barry, thanks for holding. I think Eric from Red Bank, New Jersey, agrees with you. Eric is on line 3. Thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for taking my call. Amy, I'm a huge fan of Politics Monday with Amy Walter and Tamara Keith.
Thank you.
So really glad I have an opportunity to chat with you. Just really quickly, absolutely agree with Barry and with Rayanne. I not only sleep a lot better, I don't get anxiety waking up in the morning and checking my phone anymore. It's actually kind of a pleasant experience, so that's a great thing. But I did want to follow up a little bit on impeachment. I absolutely agree Trump needs to be impeached for this. But since it looks very unlikely that the Senate will convict, what do you think the possibility is that the Senate and the House might instead adopt some sort of binding resolution or law to prevent Trump from ever taking future office? And specifically, I'm interested in your take on why Republicans wouldn't be on board with that, since a lot of them don't really seem to be very happy to have this Faustian bargain anymore. It's sort of like, you know, is it because they're afraid of a third party or Trump sort of like splitting Republicans, that adage of, you know, you're holding a wolf by the jowls and you don't like it, but you don't dare let it go? Just love to hear your thoughts on that. Thanks.
Yeah, those are really great questions. And I think, you know, for this idea of why Republicans stick with Trump, I think so much of it is that they don't have a choice. And what you're seeing is not simply, you know, Trump berating people using his bully pulpit, which for so long was Twitter. Now he doesn't have that. And he doesn't obviously have the power of the presidency to do things that he could back then. But what we do know is that so many of these state parties and organizations are run by folks who hold those same opinions, who see fealty to Trump as the number one priority. We've already seen in a place like Arizona, where the state party has censured some of its highest profile Republican office holders, including the governor, as well as censuring Cindy McCain. These are states that are critical in upcoming elections for control of the Senate and obviously for the White House. And so the reality, though, if you are a Republican office holder, is, if I go and I try to make this clean break in order to move the party forward in the long term, what are the short term risks? And the short term risk is you're going to lose a primary. And so what I think we're seeing in some ways is many of those folks who maybe in a different era would have stood up and sort of defended more institutional Republicanism or the institutions of Congress, going back to the issue of where both of you all started, which was on impeachment, maybe supporting impeachment or a censure, but now saying it's just not worth both the risk to my political career, but also the risk to my, literally to my health and safety, where people are getting death threats and things like this. And so what I think we are seeing is more of these establishment Republicans choosing to retire. We've seen one of them this week, Senator Portman from Ohio, who will likely be replaced by somebody who comes from a more Trumpian brand of politics, and or the people choose who would maybe run in previous times, who come from that more sort of pragmatic wing of the party, say it's not worth it, and they choose not to run.
Let's go to Tenanye, I hope I got that right, who's calling in from Newark on line 6. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. You have such an interesting point to make.
Thank you so much. Thank you. My name is Tenanye. I love your show. Thank you so much for creating space for real serious dialogue. I was really impressed by Biden's orders regarding racial equality and civil rights civil rights initiatives and groups. I know that executive orders really kind of are like, really don't have long-term impact, because like you were saying, they can go back and forth between whoever's in leadership. But I do think it sets the tone. And I really appreciated the delineation that he made regarding social justice and economic opportunity and wealth building. I was really happy to see that he made that delineation, because I'm a woman of color. I own an impact investment firm in Newark, where we focus on real estate development. It's called We Are Cultivation Group. And it's very, very hard to get capital. And we deal with a lot of our, incubators and entrepreneurs who can't get capital. And then a lot of the developers, the collective of, you know, people of color who are trying to develop in Newark, capital is such a challenge. And so really for me, I'm a Howard University alum. And when I graduated, the biggest thing I was able to do was to buy my first home via an FHA loan, which really helped to, I think, really change the community, because we had a lot of influx of younger people coming back to the city who could get capital. So I'd love to see, you know, from your perspective, what are kind of maybe the bills that we can focus on? Because usually, you know, capital is mostly from the private sector. But mm-hmm. how can we use and leverage a government, the mm-hmm. government and, you know, other type of, you know, entities like HUD to really spur that? And something beyond the opportunity zone, which is not what people take it, you know, it's not really for the small guys, you know.
Right.
A lot of these initiatives mm-hmm. are for bigger entities. So if we can, you know, touch on that, I think that would be great. And I love your show.
Thank you so much for calling in. So many good points. Smart lady. She's a smart person.
She is very smart. And I'm here thinking like, this is not my area of expertise on where this legislation could be going. But I think we know that, first of all, the reality that you pointed out of that, you know, yes, these executive orders or actions or proclamations don't have the same weight as a law does, but it does set the priorities for an administration. And in many, if you read these executive orders, what they do is they, you know, direct the heads of all of the agencies to do certain things, to prioritize certain things. And so I think whether you're looking at HUD, the Commerce Secretary, other places where we can see these kind of partnerships happen. Look, I think part of the problem we have in politics right now is the only thing that people focus on and what we see way too much of on cable and social media is all of the hysteria, surrounding politics. Outrage sells, everything else doesn't. And when it comes to legislating, it's, you know, what gets passed in Congress that is the big stuff, right? Or gets covered is the big stuff. What we don't see as much of is the many, many bills that pass that are bipartisan, but they just don't have the kind of allure in the media. So I think, you know, one way to look at and to follow where this is going in some ways is also to watch some of these hearings, which thankfully we can do now. Part of the joys of Zoom is that if you're at home and you have the chance, you can go log on to C-SPAN, watch the hearings. The Commerce Secretary of the HUD, of others, and see how those questions, how they answer those questions, or send your own note to your own senator to mm-hmm. say, I want these questions asked because they're important.
I do want to finish up by touching on something that's kind of come in. It's a similar sentiment said in many different ways. So I'm sort of going to distill it down to some people who are tweeting this and have called in this idea that some people like the idea of normal mm-hmm. and that normal feels good right now. But normal got us to where we are, right. I'm paraphrasing, and sort of neoliberalism and conservative obstructionism isn't going to heal us. You know, for a lot of people, Joe Biden was not their first choice. They were hoping for someone more progressive. How might that be an issue for this president? Is there something that he can do to appeal to a party that has a lot of different points of view?
Yeah. Well, that's what I think this first week has been about, right? As I said, in some ways, the people that he is putting in and around him in his cabinet are people who've been there for quite some time. They are, quote unquote, part of the normal government, right? The one that we saw pre-Trump. And, you know, this suggests, to your point, that they're not going to change all that much, right? The danger of putting people with the experience is that it leads to groupthink and it leads to blind spots because you're not having new eyes coming in. So there is that risk, for sure. But at the same time, what you're hearing, at least from the administration, through these executive orders, through the speeches that folks like and appearances that folks like Susan Rice are giving, is we are taking these concerns very seriously, that the normal wasn't always great. That normal, if that means continuing to discriminate against people, if normal meant not addressing systemic racism and systemic challenges and inequities, that's not where we're going to. So there's an acknowledgement of that, even as the reality of making those changes is still significant. So balancing both of those things is, I think, what Joe Biden has been doing this week, giving hope that there's going to be change to normal, but also assuring folks that the one most important thing we do is have government doing its normal function, which is basic competence, getting this pandemic under control, making sure everybody gets a vaccine and that it's transparent.
Thanks to everybody who called in and tweeted. And thanks to Amy Walter, national editor for The Cook Political Report and host of Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway. Amy, thanks a bunch.
This has been a lot of fun. Thank you.